out Freebird 2.
Electric boots, a mohair suit, you know I read it in a magazine.
Hello, listeners. It is currently 1:07 p.m. You are listening to WMFO in Medford. So, good afternoon, everyone. We are here in the good old Medford studio, just jamming out like we do. And today I have a guest. And guest, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Fina. I'm a sophomore and I play frisbee with Molly. I'm very happy to be here.
Great, we're glad to have you on. So have you ever been on the show?
I have one other time, but not at this time slot.
It's true.
This is a much more convenient time slot for
me. It is pretty convenient.
Yeah.
So Fina, tell me about your weekend. What'd you do?
Oh, my weekend. So I joined the ski team this year, and ooh, on Saturday we all went to regionals. And regionals is a tournament that you have to qualify for, or like a ski race.
As a team or as an individual?
As an individual. So
interesting.
Each team sends 5 of their girls and 5 of their guys, the best ones.
Okay.
And then our team also had to qualify.
Okay.
So like you had to be in the top teams in your general region.
Gotcha.
In our league. So we're in the Thompson division. And then our team got to go to regionals against a much larger group. So like University of Maine was there, Bowdoin, UConn.
Gotcha.
Like a lot of regions.
So how big
from
is
the East Coast?
Thompson region.
It's not very big. The other people are Northeastern and BU.
Okay.
And UVM generally.
Okay.
And there are a few other people like WPI, Dartmouth's club
yes.
team. But Dartmouth and UVM only send their club teams because they also have a D1 team.
Oh.
And the D1 teams produce like Olympic athletes.
Whoa.
Like we went to Dartmouth's ski pitch and they have a list on the wall of all the like
whoa.
Olympians that they've produced.
That's crazy.
So we're not really there.
Right.
But for our division, our team's doing really well.
That's amazing.
And everyone who doesn't qualify as an individual just goes to support.
Oh, that's so fun.
Yeah. So we didn't race. We were all just there like cheering them on.
Right.
Yeah.
So what happens if your top 5 people don't qualify? Do you still get to send 5 people?
So the team actually has to qualify for regionals.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm actually not sure how it works if you have an individual that should be going, but your team doesn't.
Okay.
I would imagine that the individual can still go. Because what happened last year was we had, our team didn't qualify for nationals, but we had one girl who still did and
right.
went. Yeah.
Right.
So I think that would probably be the same case for regionals.
Gotcha.
Just our team usually does qualify
okay.
to go to regionals.
So how do like general tournaments before regionals work? Do you score as a team?
Yes.
Okay, how
yes.
does that kind
so
of break down?
For the team, the only people that matter at each race are, I believe it's either the top 3 or the top 5 scorers.
Okay.
And your team can win the race if your top either 3 or 5 are the fastest,
okay.
Are like placing the highest. So they will add the times of all of them together. And you want to have the lowest time possible because it's like a slalom
right.
or giant slalom course.
Wow.
And we actually, are the girls won a bunch of races this year.
Very cool.
So that was really cool.
Yeah.
yeah. And we had an individual girl who won the whole division too for
whoa.
Her performance the whole season.
Was
yeah.
that Sammy?
That was Sammy.
Nice.
She's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So at a turn, like, does everyone on the team who wants to compete get to compete? And like most people's score don't count, so it's just like whatever. Or does it limit like, oh, only 20 people from each team can run?
No. So at these tournaments, besides regionals, everyone mm-hmm. goes.
Cool.
And Tufts has a massive team this year, like much bigger than everyone else's.
Wow.
So, and they also usually run you by how fast you are on
okay.
the course. So you'll be like, people who are newer will go last.
Oh,
and because it gradually gets icier and icier
oh.
and like harder to ski on. So they often will give the best people the first runs. And the funny gotcha. Thing that happens with Tufts is usually like running a race, they'll put a BU, UVM, Tufts, Northeastern, BU, UVM, Tufts,
right.
Northeastern. And then you get to the end and Tufts still has so many people left over that we all go in a big train.
Oh man, like
so
Tufts, Tufts, Tufts.
Yeah.
Tufts.
So it'll be like 10 of us all going at the end.
Wow.
But it's really fun. Because there's also no pressure on like
yeah.
everyone who's not in the top 5.
Yeah,
so you just go to
dope.
Like try out the course and see how fast you can go.
Yeah. That's
yeah.
how it was with like JV tennis. Only like top six mattered, and then we had like a team of like 15 people, so yeah. It was like pretty chill.
Yeah, no, I'm really glad that I got to try it because I've never raced before.
Cool.
So I knew that I wasn't gonna be like a skilled ski racer, right. But the team has been super welcoming to people who are trying it. So it's been really cool. Yeah.
So I was wondering. I was watching some Olympic skiing, and it seems like sometimes going not first is beneficial on a certain course, because I forget if it was giant slalom or regular, but there would be like the way the course works is it was like kind of icy on one patch, and so someone like missed one of their gates, and then like a bunch of people missed their gates on this one place because it was like icy and you assumed you could make a tighter turn than mm-hmm. whatever. But then the last person, like all these people like got disqualified, and then the last person just went like way slower and made the gate. And so how does it work at like a high competition level where Olympics can like groom the course or make sure it doesn't get icy? Do the better people go first, just like college?
Yeah, I think so. I haven't actually been watching a lot of Olympics, but usually the first people get to go first. Cause cool. Often, like, if you see people missing a gate, like, that is an adjustment you can make when you go. Mm-hmm. But that's a minor advantage, and because the course in general just gets much more slick. Gotcha. And it also can get very rutted just because everyone is going in the exact right. same path. And that's a disadvantage. If you can't stay in the exact tracks, then right. you'll just be all over the place.
Right.
But it definitely, that is true. It can be helpful if you're going later. An advantage of yeah. being slow is you can watch where everyone else messes up.
Right.
But that can also be really demoralizing yeah. if you're waiting in the gate and the girl in front of you or the first like three people that were yeah. in front of you all fall in the same spot. You're like, okay, yeah. well, is that about to happen to me? I yeah. don't know. Oh, we're just going to go tough. For it. Yeah. yeah.
Do you guys watch a lot of Olympics as a team?
Yeah. We have had multiple viewing parties, and at the past few races that we've gone to, every time we're in a lodge or a hotel, like, that's what's on. Like, everyone's watching the Olympics.
That's so fun.
Yeah, there's a lot of enthusiasm for yeah. the Winter Olympics. Because, as our social chair said, this is the only Winter Olympics we're going to be at Tufts for.
Very true.
So, we took advantage of
yeah, gotta the take instance. Advantage.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah. Very but cool. it's definitely been a cool situation because there's every level of expertise on the team.
Yeah.
So, like, my goal was just to be kind of on par with other people who had started or who had yeah. started last year. And it was really welcoming for that.
That's awesome.
And it's also cool because you get to watch people who are really good yeah. at what they're doing and who are qualifying for things like regionals or nationals. Wow. That's and who've dope. Been doing it for, like, their whole lives.
Cool.
Yeah.
Are there, like, coaches or do the older, like, mentors kind of, like, tell you technique that you could, like, improve on?
Yeah. So we have one coach, or we've had one very consistent coach and a few other ones who are kind of around. Mm-hmm. And he was recently a D1 racer in college.
Cool.
And has been with us the whole season. He comes to our weeknight practices, too. Wow. So, like, usually there'll be two practices a week, but people only go to one.
Because you have to, like, drive a really
yeah,
long way.
But it's right? actually not that far. It's at Bradford Mountain okay. in Massachusetts. It's really strange. You're just driving through this, like, suburban town, and there's a ski mountain.
Wow.
And it's not big. But yeah. because we're just practicing course, like, gates, you don't need a huge mountain for right. that. And then we also have some alumni who recently graduated who will come back and help us with technique, too.
That's cool.
Yeah, because the way the season starts is we have a big training week, and a lot of alumni came to that. To just ski with us and help out.
Very yeah. cool.
So that was really cool.
Did everyone come to the training week?
Not everyone, but it's probably like the highlight or one of the highlights of the season.
Yeah.
Just because you're all staying in cabins together and it's like a first time you're meeting a lot of people. So everyone who can go usually tries to go.
Yeah. That would yeah. make sense.
Yeah. I was like pretty nervous about it initially. Because I was worried that it would be intense, but it's just a lot of your favorite things. Like, I got to yeah. ski all day and then just be with the team in the afternoons, like, hanging out in the cabins.
Yeah.
So it was really fun.
What a good way to, like, start off the season.
Exactly.
Because I know in Frisbee, like, we kind of have that over spring break,
mm-hmm.
But that is, like, halfway through or even, like, towards the end a little bit. And so
right.
that's a cool way to kind of get everyone initiated. Right.
And especially because I'm already on Frisbee and feel right. like I have a team, I was kind of thinking, like, is this going to be a lot of work to get to know a whole another group of people? But because we spent like 24/7 with each other for a whole week at the start of the season, it wasn't that much effort to actually like get to know the team.
Yeah.
So that was really good.
And it's cool that it's such a big group because, I don't know, Frisbee, like, I know after spring break, we had two tournaments last year, and I think by the end, it was just, like, it was a lot of team time, and there were only, like, 20 of us.
Yeah.
And so it was definitely, like, we had been spending a lot of time. But I think with 50 people, you can, like, really spread out that time a little bit better.
Yeah. No, it's been, yeah, especially because there was also just a large community of people who started this year. So there is kind of a squad of people who didn't do it before who came in as sophomores.
Mm.
So even there, I've definitely been able to have other people who don't really know what they're doing. But it is also fun because you have to be like able to ski to join the team.
Right.
So you still have that shared experience with people who haven't done it before, just that have grown up skiing.
Right.
Which like gives you a lot in common with anyone.
Right. And probably love it for a certain reason why they'd like want to do ski team.
Yeah. And I don't know, it's just also really fun when we were at training camp, there'd be like 30 of us all skiing down the mountain at once. And it's just fun to be around a group of people who love it that much.
That's super dope.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love skiing. My mom grew up in Montreal and like skiing is a huge part of her life. Mm-hmm. And so she kind of made it like a big part of our family as well.
Really?
Which is interesting because like me and my brothers love it, but my dad like hates skiing. He would do it with my mom when they were like dating to like do what she wanted.
Yeah.
But now that they've been married for 30 years and we like go to Colorado and he just kind of like does other things, which is fine. He enjoys it.
Yeah.
But I love skiing.
Where'd you guys usually go?
We've been to Winter Park a few times.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a place, we went to Copper.
Oh, cool.
Once, and we like love Winter Park because it's like we don't need the most advanced, you know, like Vail or like the hardest, most expensive mountains.
Right.
So Winter Park is just like a good medium for us that's like cheap enough but is still like beautiful and has good variety.
Yeah. Were there other people from Iowa who also ski?
I would say like people generally like to ski. I guess we have this one, I'm not even gonna call it a mountain, it's it's a valley, because it's, you like pull up on a ski mountain, you pull up in the parking lot and the first thing you have to do is take a chairlift up, right? But in a valley you pull up to the parking lot and the first thing you do is ski down and then you take the chairlift back up like at the end.
Oh my gosh.
And so it's like obviously small, but it's like big enough that when we were little it's like still really fun and so people in Iowa like sometimes
do that.
That's how
you ski in the Midwest.
But a lot of people, like I actually have a friend who has like a house in Colorado. Like there are plenty of people that enjoy it and like make the trek out to the to the west where you're from.
Yeah. So you also had some sports happening this weekend.
I also, you're right, did have some sports. Like I'm sure our listeners know by now, we play on an ultimate frisbee team. And so we had a tournament down in Virginia. It's called the Commonwealth Cup. And this is the first time EWO has been to this tournament, I think, in like a really long time or even ever. And it was great. So on Saturday, we only had 3 games. And I would say like we kind of wiped through those teams with like minimal effort. We were winning like 15-3, 15-3. Six, I think, at the most.
Wow.
And we were like giving everyone a lot of playing time, so I think it was like definitely a good experience on Saturday for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sunday starts like bracket play, and we played I forget who the first team was, but then we played Duke and our second team, which is like very interesting because they are such a powerhouse in like varsity sports, right? Like they have such athletic people and have such a sports culture that they have like a lot of athletic people, but not a lot of like experience with frisbee in particular. So they had two like very good straight up frisbee players that were like talented in everything, but then everyone else was just like really athletic. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of interesting how they played to their strengths, but eventually we kind of just picked them apart.
Yeah, was that a close game or not as close?
Not so much. I think it was. I think we like doubled them.
Nice.
Because I don't know, for algorithm stuff, it's gets like a little bit messy when you play teams that are like way, way below you.
Mm-hmm.
It could, even if you win, it could like actually hurt you unless
so you
double their score.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the semifinals, we played NC State, and as I was telling Fina before, we lost to this team at a previous tournament about 3 weeks ago. And we were not playing our best that game. And so it was very exciting to be able to beat them. And I think we went to Universe. And so it was a good time. And then in the finals, we played UNC Chapel Hill. And they're a good team. They have one player who's, like, unbelievable. Just, like, amazing throws, but also would cut and, like, great defense too. And so she really like was a threat, and then everyone else was just like really solid players.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was a good time. I think one of our captains, Moose, this morning I was talking to her, and she said she's obviously sad we lost in the finals, but she's really glad for our team that we like went to this tournament, because we like played really well and showed ourselves and like had experience kind of at that competition level, which is like always helpful.
Right. And I think it's a really cool accomplishment to go to a new tournament you haven't been to before and get to the championships.
Yeah.
Like, even if that game wasn't a win, it was a close game and
very
it was
true.
The championship final.
Yeah.
And I also feel like one of the best parts of playing big schools in a club sport is you can roll over people who have insane football teams, like thousands more students
yeah.
than Tufts does, but you're beating them at frisbee.
Yeah.
And those are their best players.
Yeah.
At frisbee, and you're still beating them. Like, a school like Duke is such a powerhouse.
Yeah.
If they were to play our Tufts basketball team, like, I don't think Tufts
would win. We'd get rickety wrecked.
Yeah. But you guys beat them at frisbee.
Like, yeah, that's
true. An achievement.
Yeah. Big picture. That is kind of cool. Frisbee is just like so interesting that because there's no varsity level, the club scene is just so all over the place. There are like D1 schools that aren't very good at all, like Duke.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are like D3 schools like Carleton and Tufts that like can really pull their weight.
They go to nationals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
Yeah. Are you guys changing anything major up this year with like defense or offense?
Yeah. Well, if I don't know if our coaches would like the strat being publicized on air, but
oh.
I highly, highly doubt any other teams are listening
to this radio show. Dartmouth exactly. is listening.
Yeah. No, we'll just break it all down. So I think we, let's see. So I think last year, as you know, our offense was very centered around a couple people.
Mm-hmm.
We had a grad student, JoJo, and a senior, NASA, that like were unbelievable, and we ran a lot of our offense through them. And I think sometimes to our downfall, if the other team had amazing like one or two amazing defenders, they could just kind of shut down our like headquarters. But this year we've kind of been forced to spread out the offense a little bit, and so I think that's like a considerable change that we definitely had to adjust. And not to like discredit our star players, because I do think like Moose and Ham and Val like are, and our other star players like April and Claire and Margot and everyone else who's amazing on the team, like I think they definitely take on a lot of responsibility on the field, but I think we've done like a good job this year of using our depth and kind of spreading out that offense.
Right.
In defense, we are it's interesting, in practice like we run man defense a lot, you
mm-hmm.
know, like every point is like force leg, force backhand, da da da. But in games, we maybe out of, let's say, like 20 points that are like 25 points that are played, we'll maybe put Mandy on like 10%.
Wow.
We like, they love, our coaches like love clam. They love the force middle zone and the trap zone and like different versions of clam. And then we do bracketing. Like, they just like kind of spreading it out more, mm-hmm. because I think they realize that like, we are a very smart team. We're a very capable team, but like, we do not always have a speed advantage, mm-hmm. against the other team. And just doing straight up, kind of man D, where you're like having a foot race with your girl, isn't always beneficial to us.
Right.
But which is like great for me. I love kind of like junky zony D's, because mm-hmm. it's kind of like a thinking man's game. You have to pick, if you're split in between two people, you have to pick a person and communicate to your team and like have that spatial awareness. And so I like enjoy that a lot more. So
have you been playing a wing in the zone?
I have been playing a wing, yeah. in the zone. I also, in a clan, they put me as deep mm. a little bit. I mean, that was mostly when like they wanted to give Moose, Claire, or April, or Margot, or Chuck or a break. But yeah, I enjoy the wing, and I think my favorite defense is the trap zone. I think it just like works really well, because our cop is really good at marking. Frickin' Sam just like hand blocks all over the place.
Sam is a machine.
Yeah, she really is. And we can really trap them, and then they like freak out and throw something up and our defense can attack it. So
that one really gets in people's heads.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not like force middle cup, you know, is like so much work for the cup.
Yeah.
And that our goal is to just get them to pass around, right. and they do, but then it tires out our cup. So then they break us like a little bit, and our cup can't get there because they've just been sprinting for the last like 5 minutes.
Back and forth.
And so I think force middle's better, because it's kind of, it's just like sweeping, and then you work really hard to just kind of keep it, and maybe there's some crashes, but it's not like sprinting across the field.
Right.
What were your kind of fave plays or like defenses last year?
Honestly, even though the cup is really hard and physically tiring, I enjoyed playing it.
Interesting.
Because my high school team didn't play a lot of zone,
mm-hmm.
or if we did, I often like wouldn't be, or I would be in the cup.
Mm-hmm.
And so just being in a new setting of college ultimate where people are a lot faster, like the teams are usually consistent, people are good and experienced.
Yeah.
Whereas in high school, kind of like what you were saying with Duke, people wouldn't play frisbee if they weren't athletic, but a lot of the time many people would not know what they were doing.
Right.
Or like it would be their first year playing.
Right.
And so coming on where everyone was, had either played before or was just very, very athletic.
Yeah.
I think I honestly really liked being in the cup and knowing exactly where to be all the time. Like, I liked that I had a role, I could use my height.
Yeah.
And you also are kind of working in a mini team.
Right.
Because you have whoever's marking and then you have whoever's picking up the slack. And
yeah,
I just liked the communication we had going. And that often, like, we really could shut good players down.
Yeah.
Doing the trap cup. The force middle was a little more demoralizing because if you're doing your job, you are just running sprints across right. the field.
Oh, man.
But I really liked when we were able to shut, like, star players down just yeah. from us, like, jumping around.
Yeah.
And it definitely kept me in good shape.
Yeah.
Like, I knew that if I was going to be playing cup, which was one of my big roles, that I needed to be ready to be running all over the place.
Cool.
So I actually did, like, in a strange way, I enjoyed playing that.
Yeah.
That's
interesting that you said it's, like, a mini team, because there's totally some sense of, like, camaraderie with, like, when they call out, all right, you three in the cup, and then everyone looks around and it's like, all right, here we go. Like,
yep.
We can do, we're in it together.
We're
and
about
like
to suffer.
Yeah, a freshman Jordan, who is tall like yourself, has been playing a ton of cup. Also, just general shout out to Jordan, she like played amazingly this
really?
weekend. It was like unbelievable, her progress, like beautiful cuts and like skying people crazy on D. Anyway,
awesome.
In the cup, she tuna like had this, I think had it for compliment circle or something, was just like, Jordan, welcome to the cup. And it was just like a very cute moment of kind of like I don't know, you're all in it together.
Yeah, I definitely cool. felt like I got closer with Cup, like, usual players.
Yeah.
Like Tuna, Sam.
Yeah.
That was a crew. Stat yeah. when she had to play Cup.
Oh, man.
Which is not her highlight of yeah. the season. yeah, but yeah, no, I so I actually, I am kind of like, I liked playing it because I always knew where to be.
Cool.
Yeah. And I would say, even though you are really into the field positioning, that is probably one of my, like, always in sports has been somewhere where I'm not as good.
Mm.
Like, I feel like...
And so you probably don't enjoy it if you don't,
it,
like...
It just, like, is a way that I kind of do get in my head. Like, in basketball, when I started playing on a higher level, teams will have really complicated plays
yeah.
that have multiple steps. Or, like, if this thing happens, then we do this. But
right.
if this happens, then we do this. And they'll go on for a whole shot clock for, like,
right.
30 seconds. You have all these options.
Wow.
And I would get really lost in that. I often would get to the first few steps, and then I'd be like, who am I supposed to set a screen
right.
on? I don't know. And I would get really good at the actual, like, ball handling, shooting.
Yeah.
But... field positioning was never one of my strong points.
Yeah. So is this on, like, a defensive set or, like, an offensive set?
Offense.
Oh,
in offense, teams will typically have a set of plays they're going to run.
Okay.
Which usually is just so, like, a post player might screen one of the higher players so the
gotcha.
Point guard can come in.
Come around, yeah.
And it's not usually, like, you're going to this exact spot on the court. It's like you're going to run off this screen
right.
and you're going to throw it to this person. So it's not super, super set in stone,
yeah.
which was the other hard thing for me about it because it was very much like making judgments off of the current
yeah.
situation. And I
and so would fast.
Like, yeah. And like I started playing like year round, like club basketball pretty late in high school
yeah.
where a lot of people have been playing on that level for a while. So I would just be in like a very fast paced game and I would not know what was going on. So that was definitely a place where I was not as equipped for it as other people.
Yeah.
So in Frisbee, I was definitely happy whenever I got to be doing like something very defined.
Yeah.
Like,
straightforward.
Yeah. Straightforward is the word. Yeah.
That's interesting that basketball, the offense sets the tone of how it's going to go. And then defense just kind of has to like adjust, like figure it out. Because in Frisbee, it's kind of the opposite. On defense, you set what you're doing for defense, and then offense kind of adjusts from there.
Right.
Like, if defense decides to set a zone, like, a zone D, you just have to play zone offense.
Right.
Yeah. So it's interesting.
Yeah, there is also some of that in basketball, though, because there are zones in basketball.
Okay.
But the field, or, like, the court is a lot smaller.
Yeah,
so to
true.
Some extent, you can just have a similar vibe. You don't have to totally change everything you're doing, which in Frisbee, I think you frequently will really switch around where everyone is standing
yeah.
on the field, like, just based on their defense.
Yeah.
But then also usually what would happen, like, in Frisbee and basketball, you'll have a set of plays you run when they're playing man, a set when you run when they're playing
gotcha.
Zone. But usually, like, they would play to people's strengths on the team and not be super different depending
yeah.
on what they were running. Because in, like, a three-point arc, you can still shoot from most places on the
right.
court. So it doesn't need to be that different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay, well, I also news figured out how to realize how many listeners we have, which is new, and we currently have 9 listeners.
Ooh.
Yeah, so 8 are streaming from a computer, and 1 is listening to the actual radio.
Interesting.
So shout out to
that.
How
does that work? Listener. How do you listen to the actual radio?
I think you must have to like be in a car or like have a radio
wow.
and tune in to 91.5 FM. And
I'm
then,
honored.
Yeah. So I'm glad to have those listeners with us. Also, listeners, if you want to call in, we are always ready. I mean, always ready for callers. And I figured out how to keep them on, like, answer the phone off air.
Ooh,
I figured it out.
Okay.
So that's a really exciting development in
becoming
the Studio A.
Radio yes. DJ.
Yeah. Also, I was listening to some podcasts this weekend because the airports were so far away from Martinsville, Virginia, where the tournament was, that we had a 3-hour drive
oh my gosh.
From the airport to the hotel.
Wow.
And so I was thinking about NPR, how, like, Blockbusters with the internet kind of, like, totally fell out of business, right? Blockbusters, like, nobody rents movies anymore.
Right.
And nobody, like, listens to radio since TV happened. And I think NPR, it's amazing that the podcast movement has kind of saved them mm-hmm. and made radio more available to everyone and like trendy for everyone. And so it's cool that NPR can still be such like a presence and have these long-standing shows that my mom would listen to in the car like 20 years ago, but that are still like making podcasts today. Right. Like This American Life or what or wait Don't Tell Me or like mm-hmm. all these NPR shows. So good yeah. for NPR.
Yeah, I think it's really cool to watch very successful organizations like NPR adapt to changing technologies.
Yeah.
I also frequently listen to the New York Times Daily Podcast.
Ooh.
Yeah, because they, I have an internship twice a week that I have to commute to.
Right.
And that's, I think commuting is weird because it feels like kind of a waste of time.
Yeah.
You can't really do anything, yeah. but that's when podcasts come in.
Very
so
true.
I sit on the train and I listen to the New York Times daily roundup of
that's
news
great.
That's happening. Because I think that's another great example of a like field that was completely hit by the internet. Like
yeah.
very, very small subsets of people are still buying paper newspapers.
Yeah, it's so sad.
My family is a fervent subscriber to the New
yeah,
York
so
Times.
Are we.
Really?
yeah.
Yeah, so we always had the New York Times, but I feel like that's a growing minority. And
yeah.
I think like the New York Times Daily News is one of the most popular podcasts.
Cool.
So I think it's cool they've managed to extend their reach still to people who are just listening.
Yeah, I agree. My dad, for both my brothers, have when they graduated college, he got them like a 1-year subscription to Time Magazine and a 1-year subscription to the New York Times
yeah.
as like, you're a college graduate and you're educated, so this is something educated people do, you know?
That's a great gift, though.
Yeah, it's like it's an interesting notion.
Yeah. No, that's definitely something I've honestly missed in college is the experience of just, I always come upstairs, my parents are reading the newspaper,
yeah.
I read the newspaper, I know what's going on.
Yeah.
It's also just, that's why I really like reading the daily.
Yeah.
In just like the dining halls.
Yeah, I agree.
I like the experience. I'm a little antisocial for breakfast. I like the experience of just getting up and like catching up on what's going on.
Yeah.
And like eating in silence.
I agree.
So that is something I miss sometimes.
Yeah. I love eating breakfast with the daily. I do it like sometimes I have to do homework in the morning at breakfast, which just happens. But when I don't, I enjoy like I'll come to breakfast like a little bit early just to like leisurely stroll through, you know, do the Sudoku, like
right.
read the opinion pieces, and then obviously the headlines and
right.
It's yeah, the daily is great. Speaking of which, listeners, those of you who don't know, Fina is a features writer, am I correct?
You are correct.
A features writer for
yeah.
the daily. How has that experience been going?
That's been good this semester. So I am an editor now, so
ooh.
I kind of have more of my own autonomy and like what I get to do.
That's cool.
Because when you start out with the daily, I think you definitely want to be writing as much as you can.
Yeah.
And just showing the editors, like, you know what you're doing and getting involved, like, learning how to, like, set up interviews. And now I can kind of choose to write articles when I want to.
Cool.
Which is, so far, I've just written one. And I think it actually should be out sometime this week. I'm not totally sure
ooh,
when.
That's exciting.
But it's coming up. And this one was actually one of the more interesting ones I've gotten to do because it was a general profile on the issue of homelessness in Medford and Somerville.
Very interesting.
But to write that, I have done one that was a little bit on this topic before. The executive director of the Somerville Homeless Coalition came to Tufts and was talking to the Tufts Humanist Society about gentrification and just the impact Tufts has had on the area in terms of housing. So I decided to interview him again. But then I also wanted to get a view on homelessness from the perspective of people who've actually experienced it. So I went into Davis, and I don't know if you guys have ever seen the people selling newspapers in Davis.
Mm-hmm.
It's an organization called Spare Change, which partners specifically with people who have experienced homelessness. And they also produce some of the content. It's usually like locally produced. And
cool.
they sell it. It's only $2. So I bought their newspapers and just asked them, like, what was going on. Like, they were very happy to talk about how they had become homeless.
Yeah.
And both of the people I interviewed were no longer homeless. And Spare Change had really been a factor
That's amazing.
Helping them get out of it, because it gives people a concrete way to, like, instead of just begging, they're actually giving people something in return.
Right.
So you can do business. Right. So in that way, I think it's been a very innovative way for, like, homeless people to actually, like, have a concrete, like, path out of homelessness.
Yeah. And I think it's so cool that not only does it give you a path, it gives you such a sense of self-worth, because you're using your skill and creativity and writing ability to create a product that, yeah, is giving you income, which is, like, the main focus, but also kind of, like, making you feel, like, more of a human again, you know? Because I've heard a lot of, like, pieces by homelessness that it's homeless people that there's so many things that make you feel, like, dehumanized by, like, living on the street and not having basic amenities. Mm-hmm. And so that's just, like, so it's such an amazing organization.
Yeah.
Do you know if it's totally self-funded, like the newspapers they sell totally cover the cost, or if it's kind of an NGO that gets, like, separate funding?
Yeah, they had to get separate funding.
Yeah.
So I was also able to talk to the founder, and the founders of Spirit Change were homeless when they founded it. So it
That's incredible.
It was literally started by homeless people. And they initially had a lot of trouble getting backing for it.
Yeah.
Because it was a new concept. Like, he told me that New York had had a similar street paper, but it hadn't been started by homeless people.
Interesting.
So they did need funding from outside sources. They couldn't just go right into producing and selling it.
Right.
And they really had a hard time convincing people that it was going to be a stable business venture.
Yeah.
And that they knew what they're doing, because it was a new idea.
Yeah.
But they were able to get funding. There were, I think, other organizations in Boston that helped them, because it was started here.
Cool.
And yeah, I mean, it's still going. Like, one of the guys I talked to had been one of their earliest vendors in 1992, and he's been on and off with them ever since then.
Wow.
And then the other person I interviewed in Davis told me that he was no longer homeless, but he sold the newspapers to kind of keep in touch with where he came from.
That's, like, cool.
Yeah, he said that he wanted to keep selling them because then he could also reach out to other homeless people and give them an alternative to simply asking for money.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think one of the other things about it is I often, or a lot of people, will adhere to the idea that you don't want to just give people money because you don't know what they're going to use it for.
Right.
But if you're buying a newspaper, you're just buying a newspaper. Like,
right.
That's what they're using it for.
Right. And you're just, like, supporting their business.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah. And it's so funny that I think, yeah, I struggle with this a lot, whether to donate to people on the street, because the notion of, oh, I don't know what they're going to use it for. At some point, if you are at the point in your life where, whether you're homeless or you're not, or you are desperate or you're not, if you are sitting on the street begging for money, there's, like, some point of need there, you know?
Right.
And, like, at some point, whether they use it for food or for other things, like, I think I would, if I was in that situation, I would, like, appreciate people helping, you know? But at the same time, you want it to be, like, a productive system. And I think Spare Change is, like, the absolute perfect middle ground.
Right.
That you are buying it to help them out, but you're also just, like, investing in them as people.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah, so I think it really solves a lot of the problems there about people being hesitant to donate money. Yeah, that is also something I struggle a lot with. It's a strange analogy. One of the moments I realized that I think I should be giving something to people who are on the street was one time I was trying to hitchhike.
Yeah.
And so many people drove by that had space in their car. I wasn't going very far. Like, me and my friend were just trying to get somewhere, and it was pouring rain.
Oh, no.
And we're just standing there, and I started to get really angry. I was like, all these people have room in their cars. They can definitely take me. It's just a minor inconvenience for them. They don't want to stop. And I can't imagine what it's like to, especially in Davis, to see all these college students walking by all the time.
Yeah.
And knowing they have, like, spare money that they could give you literally for food.
Yeah.
And not giving it to you.
Right.
Like, it's, I don't know. I think it's a really tough one, but
I try to
do when I can. Like,
right.
I don't know.
And then, like, you want to believe that, like, okay, if I help this person, they'll eventually, like, get back on their feet and be able to, like, not do this. But then you just, like, see inevitable amounts of people begging on the street. So it's, like, even And they must be some point of success or else they wouldn't keep doing it. Right. You know, so then if they're successful and still there, I don't know. It's like, it's really a tricky situation.
And that's the issue with, like, a lot of people who are homeless have lifelong problems with addiction.
Right.
Or mental health, which are not going to get better while they're on the street.
Right.
Like, one of the things that I've heard about homelessness often is people really do need stable housing to be able to recover from other issues. Like, you are going to have mental health problems if you have to live outside.
Yeah.
Like, on the street. There are just so many stressful things about that situation. Yeah. And I think I did a project on this my senior year, just researching the issue. And I think often, like, the solution is just to give people an apartment. Because a lot of the time, that can actually be cheaper for the government and for individual people. Because if you're on the street, you might also be in and out of jail. You might be, like, getting taken to the hospital in an ambulance. And those are expensive, like, for taxpayers. So a lot of the time, it can actually be cheaper to have people living in an apartment or a house. And that's so also a way that they can actually overcome real problems like addiction, which you're not going to be able to solve if you're in a highly stressful situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is one solution I've heard a lot. But it's also very difficult to find large blocks of housing that you can just we're going to fund these.
Right. Yeah. So Fina and I have a friend, Claire, who's from the Netherlands. And I was talking with Claire and she said in the Netherlands, there are no homeless people because in a socialist country, they use like a fair amount of taxpayer money to just like create enough shelters and kind of centers for people that if you are homeless and like don't have a place to go, you can go and you at some level you have to prove that you're trying to better yourself and you're like actively looking for employment or actively looking for something that will like get yourself back on your feet. But I think that she said like the bar to prove that is like not that high, and like anyone who's like actually trying can kind of fulfill that.
Right. I really don't think it's in our interest. I don't think it's in anyone's interest for people to be homeless.
Yeah.
And I think that was what the Spare Change founder told me also. He said that when they founded it, they really wanted to change the narratives around homelessness, because one of the things about it is a lot of people are very close to becoming homeless. Like, there's a subset of homeless people who have been chronically homeless, but one of the huge percentages of the population are people who are momentarily stuck for housing. Like, their family experiences some kind of disaster, or like maybe your house burns down, or like your car breaks down and you can't go to work.
Right, and you lose your job, and all of a sudden you can't pay rent.
Right, and there are huge portions of the population that are either close to that or who have been through some kind of situation like that. Like for me, one of the things that made me feel like I had to get involved was I had this lifelong family friend. Like, she lived in my neighborhood. She used to babysit for me when I was younger. And she was pretty old and was, I don't know, she wasn't as sharp as she used to be, like, didn't have steady income because she couldn't drive, so she couldn't babysit for us anymore.
Right.
And she almost became homeless. She was evicted and was living in her car for a while, which my family didn't know about. And she didn't have family in the area that could support her.
Yeah.
So we started working with her, and there are so few resources available.
Oh my gosh.
And this is literally an old woman who doesn't have money.
Yeah.
And the government was not, there was almost nothing.
Wow.
So my family.
And that's in a place like Seattle, where you'd think would have kind of those resources.
Exactly. And they exist. There was just wait lists everywhere, or they were specific, like, because she'd been evicted, that disqualified her from a lot of places.
Interesting.
Because that made her seem unreliable, which was true. Like, she was old and like didn't have a lot of money. So it was just really strange to see that, because we are living in a very stable home. And it was like, how can we allow this to happen to someone that we've known who lives in our neighborhood? And it just was strange to me that we lived in a country where that could easily take place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. The inequality is striking at some point.
Yeah.
So it is currently 1:51 p.m. We are going to get a quick PSA. Let's see. Fina, between financial literacy and bullying, do you have a particular passion that we want to educate the public on?
Maybe we should do financial literacy.
I agree. All right, so here is a PSA about financial literacy.
The sponsored by FeedThePig.org.
Well, I finally did it. I improved my credit score.
You're kidding, right?
No.
How are we supposed to be the bad boys of electrosynth pop if you're out there being responsible? The band is about to be discovered. This is our year.
Yeah, you've been saying that for a while now.
You think anyone in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame was worried about their credit score?
Like, I never really thought that.
Of course they weren't. Rock stars aren't supposed to think about that kind of stuff. We're supposed to think about how many guitars we've smashed, write aggressively sensitive power ballads, start questionable fashion trends, tragically break up and blame creative differences.
All right, just... I thought maybe it was time to take control of my finances, you know? Start using a budget. Get out of debt. Set some goals.
A budget? Debt? Set some goals? Listen, I knew that we'd have our creative differences, but I was hoping they'd involve a little more scandal.
When it comes to financial stability, don't get left behind. Get tools and tips for saving at feedthepig.org. This message brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
So thank you to Rockstar, to... for letting us know about financial literacy. So now we're gonna play some music. So up next we have Halo by Beyonce, a classic jam.
Pray it.
All right. That was Halo by Beyonce, a classic jam. Fina, how'd you like that song?
That was one of the first songs I ever slow danced to in middle Ooh. School. So it brings back a lot of memories.
Lots of sentimental value, yeah, obviously.
Really just standing across from each other at arm's length, barely touching.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So that kind of does it. It's currently 1:57 p.m. This is Molly and Fina, and you're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. So with that, we are going to end our show with a little song called Bad Self Portraits by Lake Street Dive.
Apart-